Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the broadcast. My name is Dr. Brad Reedy. This broadcast is on brainstorming. It's Wednesday, October 1st, 2019. So tonight I'm doing a webinar based on a book that's been recommended to me by a few of our therapists who use the technique of brain spotting with their clients. And I will start off with full disclosure. This is not a technique with which I am well trained. I have read the book and will do my best to impart the information to you. And interestingly enough, I found the principles and the concepts to be really accessible. So while I don't have training and practice in this area like some of our therapists do, I found the ideas and the principles involved to be very accessible for just about anybody. And I think the reason they want me to do this is because it takes a little bit of time to explain it. And because of that, they want to have a resource that for those of you who have a child in their group, if they're using brain spotting, they want you to have some idea about what it talks about. So this is based on the book by David Graham, Dr. David Graham. Kind of the simplest idea to start off with is the idea of where you look affects how you feel. That there are connections in our brain between where our gaze is looking and what we're feeling. The idea here is that there are unconscious connections between our gaze and our feelings that simple talk therapy might take longer to access. We might not have access to those feelings as much. So this is kind of a shortcut, if you will, to finding out about exposing some of the trauma and ultimately building up resources to be able to deal with the trauma that we've had in our life. Dr. Grant talks about the technique, and he says the technique is simple, but the response is complex. So I'll kind of take you and walk you through brain spotting and his evolution of brain spotting as we go. Here's a little bit more of an in-depth introduction to brain spotting. Dr. Grant says, brain spotting uses our field of vision to find where we are holding these traumas in our brain. Brain spotting uses the visual field to turn the scanner back on itself and guide the brain to find lost internal information. By keeping the gaze focused on a specific external spot, we maintain the brain's focus on the specific internal spot where the trauma is stored in order to promote the deep processing that leads to trauma's release and resolution. So for Dr. Grant, he first started off with EMDR, and many people have heard of that now today. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. This simple technique of moving the eyes side to side along the horizontal axis. And it's through that process then people find access to traumas that are repressed or opaque or unknown to them, and then learning to kind of reprogramming the brain so that the trauma doesn't have a hold of the person. Dr. Grant moved from traditional EMDR to something that he called natural flow MDR, which was something that was a little bit less regimented. He found in some of his early clients that as he was moving his finger back and forth with one client in particular, his first one, he saw them having a reflexive response. I believe it was their eyes started to shudder, and he found himself frozen as he moved his finger from side to side. So he held their gaze in one spot. And with that, they started to access their trauma in ways they never had before. It became open to them and open to the session. So he developed this brain spotting as an evolution to EMDR and to natural flow EMDR, excuse me. Again, it's a simple concept. I don't think it's hard to access, and I think with some training, most therapists could take advantage of this. First, he talked about how as he stopped his finger, later he moved it to a pointer due to some tiny automatic response. Sometimes it was licking the lips. He noticed a change in breath, even the subtlest of blinking changes. And when he noticed that, he started to stop at that spot. The spot where he noticed that response. And then the science seemed to gain access to a broader story. Sometimes they came in with a very specific complaint about something they might be struggling with today, and then they found themselves accessing longer-term trauma. And somehow those two became connected. So deeper and broader access to the trauma. Then, Dr. Grand, talking and processing these traumas led to the unlocking of some of the blocks clients were experiencing in current day situation. He gives examples of a competitive skater and her inability to do a triple axel, and also a businessman and his phobic response to public speaking, and how brain spotting was able to kind of loosen those things up and tie them to previous trauma. There are two principal ways he started off with brain spotting, and these things evolved one on top of the other. And the first one is outside window brain spotting. So in other words, looking for these reflexive cues. There's something about the way that our brain is wired that certain gazes, and all of you intuitively know this. A lot of people will describe looking down to find their emotional, or when they're looking up, they're accessing more of a thought process. Or you might find yourself staring off into the distance when you're reliving something that you've experienced. So this outside window brain spotting was moving the marker, the pointer around and watching for those reflexive clues. Eventually, that led to some clients having a more sensitive and internal response. He called it inside window brain spotting. So as you move the pointer around, clients began to talk about the feelings that they were experiencing, right? If I'm looking far over to my left, I start to feel more vulnerable. Far over to my right, maybe I feel more grounded. So he started to talk about these two ways to access it. One is more led by the therapist, and one is led more by the client, and both are as valid. Some prefer one, and some prefer the other. Let me talk about his stepwise progression through this process. First of all, he assesses their level of stress or activation using a SUDS scale, which is the subjective unit of disturbance scale. So when you think about the car accident, when you think about your uncle abusing you, when you think about your father's alcoholism or leaving the family, what level of distress that you have? And so you rate it between a 1 and a 10 subjectively. And that becomes a baseline. He started to tie this into the somatic process, and somatic is of the body. Where do you feel the activation in your body now? Some people will talk about feeling it in their chest, maybe their shoulders, maybe their throat. Many of you can relate to that lump in your throat. That's a place where you're starting to feel the activation or the disturbance. And then moving across the visual field, looking for these reflective responses, and then pausing at a moment and beginning to explore the memory, the story, right? Beginning to really cue up, if you will, the activation. And then learning to process it, learning to talk about it, talk your way through it. And then doing a SUD assessment again, a SUD level assessment again. So after somebody talks about it, tells the story, he'll notice that a lot of their subjective disturbance has gone down. Something important that he built upon his model, and I think that this is incredibly important and transferable to a lot of therapies, he talks about dual attunement frame. Brain spotting has a combination of a body-brain focus and the client-therapist focus. In other words, you have to pay attention very, very closely to your client's responses. And that marriage of the two, of paying attention to the body and the brain, but also developing a high level of attunement from the therapist, created kind of the magic of the intervention, of the technique. Dr. Grant said, once we identify the reflexive location or outside window brain spot, we guide the client to mindfulness. There's a lot of mindfulness training. Mindfully observe their inner process, wherever it goes. We encourage curiosity and openness and discourage expectations. See what comes next. What comes next and then what follows. Don't try to direct the process and don't try to focus it or hold it back. Just trust your instincts. So as you find this spot, you take your client through this process. But even if there is no quantitative change, in other words, if the distress scale, if you come in with a complaint about something, and then you go through this process and there's no substantive change in your identification of the level of stress or distress, even if there's no quantitative change, we observe a qualitative shift. Anxiety may have morphed into anger or sadness as one emotional state yields to another. When you challenge the brain, you mobilize it and you change it. So you're working your way through it. And we know that about our emotions, that things like anger, as they get activated in us, for example, it's a protective response. It's a response that is a call to action, to set more clear boundaries, to demonstrate or practice self-care. So the shift, the transformation from one emotion to another can be a part of this process. I love this idea. One of the things I loved about his book, and I'm as skeptical as anybody could be about these kinds of techniques, is how religious they can be for the creators, and how everything can be seen as one thing. What I was impressed with in Dr. Grand's approach was a couple of things. Number one, it does not require the therapist to check their other theoretical approach at the door. Right? You're still going to use talk therapy. Brain spotting becomes a tool in support of the therapist and client relationship. And he talks a lot about it being client-led. Some of his innovations as he moved through his process in developing brain spotting came when a client asked for or suggested or responded to it a different way. Even during one of his presentations on brain spotting, somebody came up to him and gave him some goggles where the three quarters of the goggles were painted solid. There was just a see-through spot here at one end or the other. And that people, as they told their stories with various goggles, they either had an activating response or a grounded response. So he was able to incorporate that not only into his model and into his practice, but he actually used it in the second half of his brain spotting training that day. I love the idea of uncertainty, Heisenberg's principle of the more specific we become, the less unsure we are. And it's more complex than that, of course, but translating to psychology and therapy, Dr. Grand says, I have brought the uncertainty principle into brain spotting. Once I realized that the human system is so vast as to be unknowable, I surrendered to it. And that surrender was not a defeat, it was a liberation. I no longer tried to know what I couldn't, and instead I began to seek out what I could know, as scant as it was. While this is specific to this model and to his book, I think it's a really important principle for us to adopt as therapists and parents, is to bring our not knowing to our children, to our clients, is extraordinarily helpful and honoring to them. We go from being sure and suggesting that we know their truth or asking questions that can be cornering or shaming to remaining curious. And curiosity is one of the ingredients in maintaining a healthy connection with somebody. So I love the idea that he brought the uncertainty principle from mathematics and physics into therapy. So let's talk a little bit about the evolution. I'll get to the questions at the end because I don't have a moderator this evening. So I apologize for those of you submitting questions. I'll get to it. First, he started off with the x-axis, right? And then one of his clients said, it's just a little bit above that. The feeling is just a little bit above that. Then he incorporated the y-axis, up and down. So then it becomes our entire field of vision. Later on, he incorporated what he later called the z-axis, which is distance, right? We can focus and vary the distance of our gaze. So then his model became three-dimensional. He also realized that sometimes holding it still was more effective than moving. Sometimes it could move a little, and sometimes he would hold it for longer. He also incorporated bilateral sounds, and he developed CDs and has sold what sounds like dozens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of CDs, where bilateral stimulation auditorily also has an impact on people. Again, you're using the brain's process to first access feelings and experiences, and then eventually reprogramming it. He also incorporated the goggles that I shared with you earlier. He's experimented with different kinds of goggles with just part of it being open to one eye brain spotting. That was a different experience. And he was very flexible and fluid as he developed his model. He talks a lot about the resource model of brain spotting. By adding somatic experiencing and the body resource or a resource spot. So he asks you to look at a spot or pay attention to a part of your body where you feel most grounded. A lot of therapists will do this. They'll say, can you feel your feet on the floor? Can you feel your hands, your arms on the chair? That's your grounding. When you focus on those things, you deregulate, you downregulate your emotions. If you find yourself being upregulated, you can focus on the feelings in your body, or in this case, a certain gaze, a certain spot, and you'll downregulate. And this becomes a resource spot that if the person ever becomes overwhelmed in the session, they can go to. What's interesting about it, he used it with sports and artists, is that resource spot can be something that people can use outside of therapy in moments of stress. Those of you who are sports fans, you'll notice that a lot of athletes have rituals before a free throw, for example, or before a field goal attempt, or before stepping into the batter's box, or before they serve a tennis ball. And those are kind of resource spots, right? I'm going to go through a routine that's comfortable, that grounds me, that down-regulates me. You know, you'll see people get into habits that look almost ritualistic. That's the kind of idea with brain spotting, is that these movements, this body sensation de-escalates the anxiety. So the resource model of brain spotting is to develop and take advantage of those resources in our bodies and in our gaze. Eventually he developed something called gaze spotting, because he noticed when he was doing brain spotting with one of his clients that a client was looking down at a certain spot on the carpet. So in the next session, he brought that up again. And then that person went to that spot and they were able to access their emotions and work through and process them. So he just started to talk about how the field of vision and auditory expressions and our physical sensations can give us access, that they're inextricably connected to our brain. And sometimes our conscious verbal brain, we can't access where the trauma is, or at least the depth of it. And these things can open that up. Again, because I come from a place of attachment theory as a primary model, I love how much emphasis he puts on attunement. And I think that just the attention that the therapist using brain spotting gives the client can be a very grounding experience. He mentions more than once in his book that eye contact with the client, eye contact from a gentle, compassionate, empathic person, is often a resource spot for the client, a place they go back to feel grounded and safe. So the attunement, the serve and response from the therapist tends to build trust, to provide a resource for the client. The client leads, he says, and the therapist follows. This is an immutable rule of attunement, and attunement is a key component of brain spotting. I love this idea again. This is one of the principles of his book that sold it to me as something that I could use. There is no turf when it comes to healing, he says. What remains the same is the client's need to be listened to very carefully. And I think that that's true of virtually all approaches to trauma, is that the client gets to show up and tell their story in whatever way they possibly can, and the therapist listens to it intensely, attentively, and without judgment. So this is a sort of discipline that reinforces that idea that really most all of therapy teaches. So he's not trying to pull apart from the rest of the therapeutic experience and community, but really just build upon it. He says this, he says, therapists are creatures of habit and seem to have a sense of what works and why it works in therapy. Yet educating clients about how their brains work does not seem that powerful or even relevant to many therapists. I myself have been surprised by how much of a difference acquiring brain knowledge makes to clients. Not only do clients uniformly report, quote, that makes sense, but they also reply, quote, that makes me feel better. The research in other fields is consistent with this. The research in academics is consistent. That's what some of the work by Carol Dweck and the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. When young people learn about how the brain works and that it's malleable and that it's constantly pruning itself, changing, they do better in math, for example. When young people are taught that they could develop pro-social behaviors because of how the brain develops, how it's plastic and malleable, they develop more pro-social behaviors. So this is not unique to Dr. Grand. This is something that's important. You can change. That's the growth mindset. With effort, with work, with reprogramming of whatever kind comes, you can change. And having that information and some detail about it, the research says that people do better to move through and progress. Versus the fixed mindset, which Dweck talks about in her research with academics, where some people believe that people are born that way. There's such a thing as a math brain, a person who's born to know math, to be a math brain. So this is consistent. Then informing clients about how the brain works can be helpful. So I'll share with some of the take-home messages. Like I said at the beginning, full disclosure, this is not my technique. This is not a technique that I'm trained in. I just read Dr. Grand's book at the suggestion of the therapist, but I found it to be incredibly helpful and complementary to our work. And while I might not be trained in it now, I would encourage many of my clients to give it a shot and try it. It's really built for efficiency. He talks about, this is important, he talks about what can be accomplished, what will take years in more traditional talk therapy can take months. He says months with brain spotting. It's the same science, by the way, folks, that's behind all experiential therapy. So at Evoke, we don't just use the gaze of the client or bilateral auditory stimulation. We use their entire body, right? Participating in a wilderness therapy program means that you're getting access to everything because you're involving all of the senses, all of the experience. So let's talk about some take-home points. He says this. He says, talk therapy reaches only the areas of the brain that use language, not the areas where the deepest of emotions and body experiences are held. I'm not sure that that's always true, but I know that experiential therapies can augment and enhance talk therapy. I have found, and maybe it's because I have more and more experience with it, that talk therapy can do a lot of that, especially with a skilled clinician. But I have no doubt that EMDR, flow MD, EMDR, and brain spotting can augment and add to that. Just the same way that I believe that wilderness therapy, the experiential therapy we do in our intensive program, can augment or add to talk therapy techniques. Brain spotting is not protocol driven, he says. There are no steps or procedures that have to be followed. His flexibility is profound. It's unique to see that kind of flexibility in somebody that is the founder and creator of a new therapeutic approach. You don't often see that, right? There's, like I mentioned earlier, there tends to be this kind of religious zeal for people who create new models. But he was absolutely open and was very flexible and would let as often the client lead him to new ideas and to new innovations. He talks about how you can do brain spotting by yourself. I share the example with athletes, right? It's a mindfulness. It's a meditation. It's paying attention to what your body is telling you. It's paying attention to how you feel when you direct your gaze in a certain direction. And that can become a kind of meditation and mindfulness that can help you, like I said, to down-regulate or to reduce your anxiety. In fact, he says you're doing it now. You're always doing it. You're paying attention to where your gaze is, and you're noticing what makes you feel uncomfortable or comfortable. The eye contact that you make with somebody, or the lack of it, for example, is an example of brain spotting. The idea of working in a field of uncertainty. I think that is one of the take-homes from this book that can be universal. He says, psychology is a reflection of physiology, and brain spotting is a physiological approach with psychological consequences. I'm going to read that again for those of you listening on the podcast, because I think it's a profound but simple explanation. Psychology is a reflection of physiology, right? It's our brains. The chemistry in our brains is demonstrated through our psychology. Psychology is a reflection of physiology. And brain spotting is a physiological approach with psychological consequences. So you're using brain functioning, and in this case, for the most part, gaze, eye direction. You're using that to have large and efficient psychological consequences. Like I've said a couple of times, it's designed for efficiency. You can get to places quicker, and in some cases, according to him, in ways that you can't get there in other ways, or it takes a lot longer. I think that's why, again, wellness therapy is so effective. He says healing happens not only in the sessions, but also in between the sessions. I think that's true of a lot of therapy. In fact, I always talk about this in wellness therapy that, you know, the therapists are there for 2 out of the 7 days a week. But so much of the richness happens in between the therapist's visits. Not only are there therapeutic staff that are facilitating therapeutic processes also, but you learn to kind of trial and error practice what you've been learning. And finally, brain spotting completely integrates the therapist's relational and neurobiological attunement to the client. So the task of, like I said, paying attention to the tiniest of reflexes is an enhancement of the kind of attunement that we all want to, ideally will, use with our loved ones, with our children. And the client experiences that attunement as resonance, as being seen and heard. So let me go to the questions. It says, should there be MRIs of the brain before wilderness and after wilderness to measure activity and change, similar to the pre-concussion baselines testing before athletes enter a season's competition? It appears there is no downside. I don't know the science well enough, but I agree with you that there's very little downside. He uses MRIs and functional MRIs to measure the effect of brain spotting. So I think some kind of brain imaging, if you have the capacity, the ability, the resources, I don't see much of a downside. I think it could be, I think in the future, as those kinds of imaging, those kinds of tests become more and more prolific, and I hope they will, I think that'll be a very common marker for progress. So I don't know the science specifically, but I agree with your conclusion that there's very little downside and potential upside. Should there also be measuring of oxygen levels pre and post wilderness? Oxygen levels are critical in brain and body development. Again, you sound like you have a medical background that I don't have. So I can't speak to that, and I can imagine very little downside. Is it possible to consider the change of the term mental health to brain health? There is no stigma to brain health. I've heard that discussion before. In fact, when I was doing a lot of research, as I was working with a specific population around mass shootings, that idea came up. Brain health versus mental health. I'm curious about that also. You know, it's interesting when I think about stigma. You know, all of my children go to therapy, all four of my children. And not when they're in crisis. My wife and I go to therapy. It's part of our culture and our family. And so the lack of stigma in our family isn't due to anything but we've done our work. And so I remember I had a client one time, a parent shared with me that her son said that he didn't like the idea of the word surrender in recovery, that for him it had a negative, he had a negative association with it. And I remember joking with this parent about that. That sounds like an issue of surrender if you want to change the words. So I don't know if that's the solution. You know, I would rather talk about our humanity, our fallibility. You know, I kind of lean into the words that people, our culture has a lot of stigma around. You know, in my first book, I talk about the idiot parent, that when we accept that we are idiots, which is a word that would be for most people a stigmatized word, right? It's not a kind word. But in the context of what I'm teaching, when we accept that we're all idiots, that we're all numbskulls, neurotic, old-fashioned, maladjusted people, you take away all of the stigma of all the labels and all of the words. So I like the idea that you're presenting that I've heard of before. And I think another way to look at it, and I'm not making a case for one or the other, is that we just pull apart the shame that our culture has connected to a lot of the terms. So when I talk to you about going to therapy, as I do often on these podcasts and webinars, that's part of what I'm trying to do is it's just, for me, it's just a part of a healthy lifestyle to go to therapy. It's part of healthy self-care. And that's the way that I remove the stigma, is by putting it out in the light. So great question, and I'm not sure of the answer. Somebody says there's no sound. It sounds like for everybody else, there is sound. So there might have been a problem with your computer. I imagine this would be very difficult to follow without sound. So yeah, if you didn't hear me, you can't hear this either. But everybody else said that the sound was working. So, all right, I'm going to go with some upcoming slides and announcements, and then I'll go back to any questions if there are any. We have upcoming parent support groups. I'm going to be in London, England this October 6th from 4 to 6 p.m. I'll be in Chicago October 27th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. That's a Sunday. In New York on Monday, November 4th, 7 to 9 p.m. And in Southern California, specifically the South Bay area, December 1st, that's a Sunday. We'll announce the time as that date becomes firm. For all of our upcoming parent support groups, and we invite all of you to come to get healthy support and connection, please RSVP or ask questions by emailing melanie@evoketherapy.com. If you want to do a deep dive, again, experiential, really bypass some of the limitations of the conscious mind, attending our intensives, our Finding You, are wonderful opportunities that I not only wholeheartedly endorse, but also I myself practice, and so does every member of my family and my executive team. The next one is Finding You. I think there's one spot left in our October Finding You. So if we get to the point where these are filling up, we'll start opening up two per month. And then November 13th is the one that's scheduled after that. Go to our website or email us at intensives@evoketherapy.com for more information. Pursuits trips are adventure trips all over the world, custom made for families or young adults. Think therapy light, think a reconnection. We ask all current parents to go to 6 12-step support groups, any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, Families Anonymous. You can also go to adultchildren.org to go to an ACOA meeting, Adult Children of Alcoholics, or Alateen for teens. Also, if you prefer, if you struggle with the higher power idea, refugerecovery.org is a place you can go to attend support groups that are Buddhist-inspired, less focused on a higher power. NAMI.org, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is a resource where you can find classes and resources in your local area with the local chapter that are affordable or free. All of these broadcasts are available on the podcast app on an iPhone or iOS device using the podcast app. on an Android device using the SoundCloud app or on your computer, you can go to soundcloud.com. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find us at Evoke Therapy Programs using the handle at Evoke Therapy, or you can find the Summit Lodge using at Evoke Summit Lodge on Instagram. On Facebook, you can find Evoke. You can find Evoke by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. You can also find the Alumni Foundation on Facebook by searching Evoke Family Foundation. It's an organization of alumni families that have come together to raise money to help pay for therapy for people that can't afford it. Our Evoke Therapy blog is available with new content each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon, also on Audible. And if you go to the Parent Alumni Foundation book page through the Amazon Smiles program, a percentage of the proceeds goes to the foundation to help people that can't afford therapy. All right, are there any more questions? And again, I hope this was a helpful introduction to the idea, even though it's not my model. And I hope there's even some carryovers to ideas in therapy that aren't just limited to this one model, this one idea. It looks like there are no other questions. How do you find a good therapist for this? Somebody asks. I don't know the answer to that question. That's a good question. I imagine word of mouth. I imagine something on Google or calling around and talking to therapists and asking them if they know somebody that does it. So I don't know anything other than word of mouth. There were some resources in the back of Dr. Grand's book that I didn't share with you tonight. In there, they might have some resources where you're able to find some therapists who have been trained in the model. So that might be a good resource for you also. I'm sorry, I can't be more specific. Thank you for that. No matter how this is or why you attended tonight, I want to thank you for and on behalf of your children for attending these, for being willing to learn and to do your own work. I think it makes a dramatic difference in your child's life, recovery, and maintenance. So thank you for joining me. I hope it's a helpful point of contact. I will be out of the country for the next 10 days or so. So we won't be having a broadcast unless somebody substitutes for me, but I don't have any volunteers right now. So I'll be back the following week, and so I'll announce the upcoming broadcast after that. So thanks for joining us tonight. Have a great evening. Talk to you when I return. Take care. Bye-bye.
Talk no time.